When it comes to blending hip-hop and jazz, there's perhaps nobody better in the world than Jeff Wilkinson, whose group Us Three has been together for nearly 20 years now. They've got a new album that just came out this month, and he joins us right now via Skype and makes a connection. So how are you doing, and how excited are you for this new album to come out?
I'm good, thanks, Dave. Good to be with you. It's always exciting releasing a new album. So we're just getting ready for a European tour, and it's starting in a couple of weeks as well.
Yeah, and one thing I like about Us Three is that the music is constantly evolving. It's changing a little bit each time. You kind of theme things out. You kind of find, discover new lyricists and everything. So kind of, describe this new album and what the sound's going to be like.
Yeah, well, the whole plan right from the start was to change vocalists on each album. That lends itself to it being slightly different every time, obviously. On the new album, actually, I've got one American guy, Ovius Maximus from New York, and one English MC, Akala, who's a fantastic MC. And again, a variety of British jazz players, some guys who've been with me since day one, like Ed Jones, if anybody's got hand on the torch, or anybody saw the Us Three band playing in America back in the 90s, they will recognize his sound and his name. And the album's called Lie, Cheat and Steal, which is kind of a bit of a reference to what's going on at the moment, I think. A reference to sort of the state of the world that we're in at the moment, I think.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. What are some of the your favorite tracks on this new album?
I'm still in that phase where I love them all, which is good.
That is good.
I have a subjective opinion, so maybe I'm not the best person to ask, but we got a variety. I like the title track. I think the title track is it's the only one on the album that actually features Akala and Ovius together, and that's worked out really well.
So we're talking to Jeff right now from Us Three. So how much, like Facebook, MySpace, the internet, et cetera, how much has that helped in finding some of these awesome, talented people? Because I'm thinking, back in the 90s, that would have been a lot more challenging, right?
Yeah, I used to have, with changing the vocalists on each album, I used to have a bit of a network of people across the States, mainly in New York, finding me vocalists, really. And people would, I remember the days when people would send me cassettes, Dave, of demos.
I miss those days.
And then we went through the whole MySpace thing when it was everybody and anybody had a MySpace page, and it was really easy to check out guys on there. But there's all sorts of things now, like SoundCloud, whatever. There's lots of people putting their own things out independently. So it's become much easier to find like-minded collaborators now.
So, and you mentioned a second ago, you guys are going to be out, playing a lot. And I've also heard seeing you guys in concerts, quite an experience. I've never been lucky enough to see that. But kind of tell us about what your concerts, are like. And are you any chance we'll see you back here in the States anytime soon, hopefully?
I would love to bring the band to the States. It's purely one of economics is the reason why we haven't been there for a long time. There's eight people on stage, so that's a lot of flight costs. But we're trying to make it happen next year, so we'll see. But yeah, this with the tour in October, we're starting off in London, and then we go to Belgium, France, Italy, Czech Republic, Poland, Austria, Slovenia, and Bulgaria. So it's pretty varied.
Man, I'm jealous. You get to see some beautiful parts of the country or the world.
Yeah. Well, with the last album as well, we toured Russia, China, and Japan. So we like to get out there and take the music out to the people. I think that's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we talk about the formation of Us Three back in the day, I'd kind of like to hear more about your background individually. So I know, obviously very jazz centered, but, tell us where that jazz interest came from, and then, what your background is with music. When did you kind of start loving that?
Well, probably the first time I ever heard jazz was probably coming out of my older brother's bedroom when I was a teenager, kind of thinking, what's that racket? And I remember going in to ask him what it was, and he was playing some Art Blakey kind of stuff. And I think that's where it first went in. But when I started DJing back in the 80s, when hip-hop was coming through, I was playing a lot of jazz funk as well. And when you're playing things like 70s Donald Byrd and Roy Ayers and things like that, it's a relatively short step backwards from, say, the Donald Byrd's Places and Spaces era, 70s jazz funk, back to the stuff that he did in the 60s. Being the inquisitive type as I am, I just wanted to investigate what else those guys had done earlier. And when I started listening to this, I just really liked it. It wasn't that it was particularly hip or anything at the time. It was just what I was into. So as the sort of 80s and 90s developed, I've been kind of discovering hip hop and jazz in tandem, really, at the same time. And it kind of became a natural thing to put the two together.
Now, obviously, Blue Note Records, I think it's one of the, you know, awesome, just great catalog and a huge part of your early days, especially. Can you kind of explain to everybody, you know, so everyone knows exactly what Blue Note Records is and was, what, you know, what that is?
Well, Blue Note Records is the jazz label, really. They had an in-house sound engineer called Rudy Van Gelder, who had a studio in New Jersey and must have recorded 99% of their classic 60s, mid to early 60s stuff in his studio. So they had a real specific sound to their stuff. It was absolutely brilliantly recorded and still sounds brilliantly recorded to this day as well. And they seemed to record all the important musicians of that time throughout the 60s and really created a library of music then that was happening, which was an incredible thing to do.
So 1992-ish, from what I can tell, I know you did a couple of projects before that, but us three basically started around 1992. So how did you come up with the idea for the group then, and how did you kind of meet and form the original lineup?
Well, it wasn't a group, really, and probably still isn't a group, really. There was two of us when we started, myself and I had a partner called Mel Simpson, and it was a kind of production project, really. We'd done a track called The Band Played the Boogie, which sampled a Grant Green track called Sookie Sookie, which was a kind of jazz. There was a scene in London, which everyone called the jazz dance scene, where you could get away with, when you were DJing, you could get away with playing out pretty much jazz all night, really, and people would dance to it all night. It sounds odd now, but it was absolutely brilliant at the time. And my background came out of DJing out of that, really. And Grant Green's version of Sookie Sookie was a kind of classic of that scene. Even though the scene was really small, it was guaranteed to pack the dance floor out. And all I did really was kind of update that by taking some loops out of that, put a sax player playing on it. Ed Jones, in fact, the guy who I was just talking about, and an English rapper. And that was indirectly what led to me getting the whole deal with Blue Note, really, and very much laid down a blueprint of what us three became.
So is there any truth? I think I read this like on Wikipedia, so it's probably, you know, who knows if it's accurate, but Kiss FM was playing that in London and you got called in to the, you know, the offices there of the record company, and you were like, man, I hope they're not going to like sue me or something. Is that true? Is that whole story true?
Yeah, it's very much true. Yeah, it is. It really did happen. I got called in to see an A&R guy called David Field, and I literally really did not know if he was going to sue us or if he liked the record. You know, his secretary called me, so I hadn't even spoken to him before I got there. And when he opened the door to his office, he was smiling, so that was a giveaway. I knew it was good. And it turned out that he'd bought several copies of the single and he'd sent it to the Capitol Records A&R office in LA and to Bruce Lundvall, the president of Blue Note. And he was just intrigued, really, because at the time, you know, I wasn't the first person to put hip hop and jazz together. There were other people doing it, like Stetsasonic, Gangstar as well. And there was a few others. But it was a kind of hot topic at the time. And I really had one of those seize the day moments in the very first meeting that I had with David, and said, you know, if you let us use the Blue Note back catalogue as a sampling resource, we could create the ultimate fusion of hip hop and jazz. And to my amazement, he kind of bought the idea. He really liked it, but it wasn't his. It wasn't his decision to make. Really, it was Bruce's decision to make, as he was the president of the label, and they were all excited by the idea. But obviously a bit nervous because it had never been done before. So they kind of gave us a couple of $1,000s to make some tracks, and we made two demos, One of the demos never even made it onto the album Hand on the Torch. The other one was a tune called Cantaloupe.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, might have done some small things, right?
Well, no one really knew what was going to happen to that then.
Really?
But that was kind of March 1992, and Cantaloupe really got me the deal.
So kind of tell us, what do you remember about the day or night, or, you know, or where you were when you came up with Cantaloupe? Like, what do you remember about that? And did you know instantly that it was going to be maybe not a hit, but something that really helped you get where you wanted to get?
No, nobody thought that it was a hit, to be honest. I thought that it was just a kind of funky little club tune that was very much for that jazz dance scene in London. That was all I was trying to make, to be honest. I was trying to capture what was going on in London at the time, which was, it had expanded from the jazz dance scene into clubs like Giles Peterson's Talking Loud sessions at Dingwalls on a Sunday, which were really good. And the DJs there would play a mixture of jazz, Latin, funk, R&B, rap, hip hop, all sorts of things. So and it became a bit of a melting pot, really. And I think that's what I was trying to capture with Cantaloupe.
So when you use sampling and stuff like the Blue Note stuff, how does that process work? Like, did you already have the words written and kind of the beat and you added that later? Or did you build around, you know, the samples in the first place? Or how does that work?
Yeah, it was pretty much built around the samples, really. The samples and the beat, and then the lyrics, the rapping came on top. And then we always put a kind of young British jazz soloist on top. So I didn't want it to just be a retrospective thing. The whole idea, or one of the main ideas about it, was to kind of go against this idea, which was prevalent at the time, that jazz was a hip-hop, that jazz was an old man's music. And, you know, I wanted to express what was happening in the clubs then, or certainly what was happening in the clubs in London, by putting it all together and presenting it in a young way, in a different way. So that relates back to the name Us Three as well, because there was kind of three elements to the music, really. There was the samples, which kind of acknowledged the past, the beats and the rap, which rooted it in the present, and with the use of a young guy soloing on top, which in the case of Cantaloupe, the trumpet player was a 21-year-old trumpet player called Gerard Presenza, who's a fantastic player. So it kind of acknowledged the past, was rooted in the present, but looked forward to the future at the same time.
And the sample, one of the samples in that at the beginning, it talks about the Birdland Jazz Club before in New York City. I'm assuming you've probably been there before, right? Perform maybe?
Birdland, well, we went to have a look at where Birdland was. It's actually a strip joint called Flash Dancers now. It was when we went there. Me and KCB, one of the rappers on the second album, went down to the corner of Broadway and 52nd, which they used to call the jazz corner of the world because that's where Birdland was. And unfortunately, yeah, it changed into this strip joint. We went inside and was kind of standing there looking at what was inside there, which was largely topless girls. And the manager kind of came up and said, you know, what are you guys doing? And then I started talking. He realized I was English and he was like, oh, you're one of those jazz guys. And he just said, go ahead, sniff the walls. That's quite funny.
For some reason, I thought that it reopened or something. But I guess I was wrong about it.
It may have done. It's been a while since I've been in New York.
That's pretty funny right there. Okay, so like you said, the song was kind of done in 1992, hit the top 10 over here in 94. So what are your favorite memories of, you know, being around the U.S. around that time?
Wow. Well, it went crazy, actually. Like I say, it seemed to take a long time. It was a bit of a sleeper track. I'm sure people thought it came out of nowhere, but it was actually 2 years since we'd made the track as to when it was in the top 10 in America. But it was fantastic. It's a bit of a blur now because we did do a lot of touring and a lot of traveling at the time, because it wasn't just in America. It was literally all over the world. So we traveled all over Europe and Japan. We had a lot of fun in Japan as well.
So you mentioned that you made two demos, like you said, Cantaloupe and Hand on the Torch. So whatever happened to Hand on the Torch? Did that ever see the light of day? Is it still around? Or
And there must be tapes of it somewhere. Not that I'd want to go back and listen to it, though. If it wasn't good enough for the album, it's probably not good enough now.
So we're never going to get to hear it then? Is that what you're told?
I hope not.
Well, that's pretty good. How about the video for Cantaloupe? How fun was that to shoot that?
Yeah, we made two videos. We made the first video we made a kind of cool black and white video, which you can see on YouTube. And MTV was quite a new thing then in the early 90s. And when the record company took the video to YouTube, they thought it was too depressing because it was black and white. So the record company shot another one. This is true. The budget was so small that they wouldn't pay for me or Mel to go to LA to shoot it. So that's why we're not in the video. That's record companies for you.
Yeah, it sounds like
took the rapper.
I've had that place in the past, so I hear you.
And again, I was just talking about one of the whole things about us three was about changing the perception that jazz was an old man's music. So what do they do in the video? That if you look at the color video that they did for Cantaloupe, there's an old guy in the video playing the drums. Well, there wasn't an old drummer on the record, and there's an old guy playing the trumpet in the video. But the person who played the trumpet, in reality, was 21 years old. So when I saw the video, I actually went nuts. I was really angry because they'd misrepresented it to me. But then it shows what I know, because everybody got excited about the video, and the video went on to win loads of awards, and it obviously helped the record. So.
Have you been to Kansas City before? That's where we're based at. Have you ever been here to the jazz scene here?
Probably in 1994, but I can't remember if I had.
Yeah, a blur from back then, right?
Yeah, it was, unfortunately.
So we're talking about the new album again here, Lie, Cheat, and Steal. Now that's out. So, you know, it's your eighth album. How does it rank compared to the rest of them? I mean, obviously you're excited about it. I mean, do you feel like you're still evolving, you know, better and better?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Since this is the fifth album I've released independently, so I've kind of become symptomatic of what's happened to the music business in general. You know, I used to be obviously signed to Capitol Records, a major label, and now I'm independent, and a lot of artists are having to do that. And it's nice having kind of complete control artistically over everything you do, but it's quite boring having to pay for everything yourself. So you're kind of sometimes restricted financially by what you can do. But I think I've got into I haven't been using samples since I've been independent. Just the cost of clearing samples is ridiculous, and the time that it takes. And as the band has become more important, the band has developed, I've used more and more of the live musicians that I've used on stage. I've used them more and more in the studio. So the live band and the albums have become much more interlinked, if you like. I really like it like that, actually. You know, I've got kind of a really tight family of people to work with, which feels good.
Yeah. Well, one thing I forgot to ask you about earlier is the name Us Three. So how'd you guys come up with that? And was there ever any other name that you almost were instead?
There's never been three people. Yeah, everyone asks me about that. How did it come about? It was the name of a Horace Parlan album, who was a pianist on Blue Note in the 60s, did an album called Us Three. That's where the name came from. We just liked it at the time.
And then tell us how we can, you know, stay up to date with you, everyone listening right now, because obviously you're out and about touring. You've got new music coming out all the time. Tell us about your website and how we can find you and everything like that.
Yeah, I'm at www.us3.com. There's also links on there to the Facebook page, which is Us3 Official. And I'm on Twitter, which is Us3 Official as well. And we're on YouTube, which is Us3 Videos on YouTube. If there's any promoters listening into America, get in touch. I desperately want to bring the band back to America. That would be lovely.
We got to get you back over here. That way. Maybe we'll go into I'll buy you a drink at what used to be the Birdland.
If it's still Flashdancers, yeah.
Well, we are very much excited to get you back over here like you talked about. We need to make that happen. And, you know, the new stuff, I love it. And I look forward to following you for years to come.
Good, cool. You know what I haven't got? I don't think you've sent me an address. If I've got an address for you, I can post you the copy of this new CD.
Oh, yeah. I'll email that to you right away, actually. I'd love to hear it.
Okay, cool.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for your time. And we will definitely stay in touch and hopefully talk in the future.
Great. Okay. Thanks a lot, Dave.
Take care. Have a good day.
Okay, you too. Bye.